I'm Monica Vischer in the CPR Performance Studio, here with Caroline Stessinger, distinguished pianist and author and founder and president of the Mozart Academy. She is also the author of a new book called A Century of Wisdom, Lessons from the Life of Alice Hertz Sommer, the world's oldest living Holocaust survivor. Caroline, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And we're here to talk about Alice. We're here to talk about Terezin. And first of all, can you tell me who Alice Hertz Sommer is?
Alice, as you said, is the world's oldest living Holocaust survivor. We will celebrate her 109th birthday on November 26th. And she is still living alone by herself, making her own breakfast. And she practices 3 hours a day, gives interviews, does a little television when they come to her, and receives guests, a stream of guests daily.
Tell me what it is that sustains Alice.
It's the inner Alice that sustains her. And I think it always has been that inner Alice. She's had what Kafka called that something indestructible inside her. I am convinced that in the concentration camp, it never crossed her mind, nor did she allow a negative thought to come into her head that she might not survive. And she had music. Together, she has an eternal optimistic spirit, an unusual kind of optimism. And the music gave her the discipline to keep going.
Start from the beginning. Her story, she was a serious and recognized pianist. Talk to me about her imprisonment at the Terezin concentration camp. When did that start? And tell me that story.
Alice went into the camp and was forced into the camp. Terezin is a small town about 45 minutes out of Prague, country, rather dismal place, actually. The countryside around it is beautiful. The Germans renamed it Theresienstadt. Stadt means town, and Theresien means like the Empress Teresa. So it's Theresienstadt.
And so she was imprisoned there in 1943.
In 1943. And liberated on May 8th, 1945. Her husband was deported to Auschwitz, where he died very soon after they got there. And her mother had been sent to Theresienstadt in 1942 and had already perished. And her husband's in-laws had already perished.
Now, this was a concentration camp where the Nazis very intentionally put the elite, the musicians, the intellects, the doctors, the composers. Is that how she ended up there?
No. Eichmann was determined to clean Europe of all Jews. And Theresienstadt was a way station. It was a holding place until they had enough trains to take people to Auschwitz or other camps further east and gas them. They were also building their own gas ovens in Theresienstadt and planning to gas people there if they had any people left. If Auschwitz couldn't accommodate and couldn't kill enough, then they would. But those gas ovens were never activated. Mm-hmm. The war ended first, thank goodness.
And talk to me about the role that music played in the Terezin concentration camp.
It's terribly interesting. What happened is that musicians, I mean, how can I not take my violin with me? And they knew it was illegal because they had, you know, a book of rules. They were not allowed to take scores or instruments, but people smuggled their instruments in, and some smuggled some music in. And when they first arrived in 42, when the camp was really first operational, they made secret concerts in attics and basements and wherever they could find a place. They were discovered by the Nazis. They could have been shot for it. But the Nazis, aha, it's a way to keep people busy while and out of our hair while we get the trains functioning. And what good propaganda? Of course we treat the Jews wonderfully. And of course it's a paradise. Just think, they're living so, listening to concerts much better here than in bombed out German cities. So it was useful for them.
And then, of course, there was that visit from the Red Cross where they put up this front as if everything were just fine. And
everything was fine,
in
yes.
fact, a robust life at
right,
Terezin.
Right. They were fortunate, was the attitude. But for the Jews, it was a way of keeping a memory of their own identity alive. And I suspect when you can keep your identity, no one can really destroy you. And remember, no one can steal what's in your mind. The Nazis could take their bank account, they could humiliate them, they could starve them, but they couldn't take the music out of their heads. They could listen to music in their minds without anyone knowing.
I want to go back a little bit to the music that she played in Terezin.
She played a wide repertoire. She played all the Chopin etudes. She played all pieces of Schumann fantasy. She played several Beethoven sonatas. She played Dvorak piano quintet, Schumann piano quintet. You know, the dum, 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 dum. It's the way it starts. She played a great deal of repertoire. She played whatever. And she played Victor Ullmann's second sonata. And she played compositions that people wrote in the camp. She played a little something of whatever there was to play. Franz Krause, Hans Krause, Pavel Haas. She played.
You brought with you the score of the Italian Concerto by Bach. Tell me the story there.
It's such an interesting story because her close friend, Edith Steiner Krause, who's also still alive, she's almost 100, lives in Israel. She's nearly blind. She's not in, she's 10 years younger than Alice, but she's not in such good shape. She was a wonderful pianist. She was a student of Schnabel and the youngest student that Schnabel had ever accepted into his master classes. And one day, Alice introduced her to a young girl who had come to the free time organization place, which Alice was one of the, and Victor Ullmann were the heads of, and said that she wanted to play in one of the concerts. Well, what do you know? What would you like to play? Well, when I was taken away, I was working on the Italian Concerto by Bach. I said, fine, why don't you play that? She said, but I don't have the music. And Edith Steiner Krause said, jumped in and said, don't worry, I'll make a copy for you. And this wonderful woman, I can't imagine it, what she stayed up, I don't know how she did it, found enough scraps of paper to copy down from memory every note of this music. Yeah, I can start a little bit of it. Goes on for many, many pages. It has three movements. And to write out all of those notes is very complex and from memory. I doubt if there are five pianists today that could do that, even if they had plenty of time and the right paper and tools. Even though they have it memorized, they may not be able to write out every note.
And the music continued. The Nazis eventually encouraged performances.
Oh, they did. They more than encouraged. They ordered performances. More better. The more, the better. It changed over time. At the very beginning of 1943, there were so many musicians in the camp that four symphony orchestras could have played simultaneously. But then Eichmann was sending more and more trains, and 1,000, 2,000 people at a time were deported further east to be killed. And so there were fewer and fewer musicians. But then they began sending people to Terezin from Germany, Holland, France, from all over Europe. And still the musicians were coming, and anyone who played at all would join the concert.
Mm-hmm. Schumann's Träumerei, this is another piece she played.
Yes. Well, Alice played this as a child. It was one of the first, I think she was probably 7 or 8, when most children who take piano lessons and have parents who make sure they practice, of course, and are serious, play this piece. It's a beloved piece from Schumann's Kindertsänen, which means scenes of childhood. And Träumerei is the translation from the German, is dreaming. And Alice played it quite well. Her brother wanted to learn to play it on the violin. And his teacher said, but you can't because you don't know love. This is about love. And he said, oh, but, you know, I had this girl, and I think of her every morning when I wake up and when I go to school. He was about 13 at the time. And when I go to school and before I go to bed, the teacher said, okay, you understand love, so we'll work on it. That night, he went home and wanted Alice to play it for him. He'd play the melody line, and she would accompany him. And, of course, I think it's terribly familiar. The piano piece is just... But the brother, wanting to express emotion and love, was playing his melody line. And lots of vibrato, of course. And Alice got up and said, Mother, make him stop. He doesn't know how to count. And he said, you can't play it because you don't know about love. And she says, no, but I know how to count and what the composer wanted me to play.
Now, Alice was highly regarded as a pianist.
Yes, she
was. By her musical peers. I mean, she was on course to become a concert pianist.
She was a concert pianist. She'd already made her debut and played several times with the Czech Philharmonic, and that's no mean accomplishment. They're very tough about who's allowed to play with them. It's a very proud organization. So to have made her debut was wonderful, but to be invited back was this good housekeeping stamp of approval, really.
Her mother knew Gustav Mahler.
Yes, she did.
Influential writer Franz Kafka was a family friend.
Kafka was a family friend. In fact, her sister was engaged to a man who was Kafka's closest friend. They'd gone to law school together, and they had both decided not to practice law together, very close. And Kafka would come to their house for lunch on Sundays. And Alice knew him from the time she was about 8 years old and knew him quite well. She attended his funeral with her entire family. She was already 21 when he died.
So this is a woman who lived within high culture, which extended to those she knew in the Terezin concentration camp. Talk about her relationships with the various distinguished musicians at Terezin.
Well, of course, they all knew each other, and they particularly knew Alice and wanted her to play their works. Alice, I believe, played more concerts than any other musician there. She played more than 100. She participated. She played solo concerts. She played with the orchestra once. She played chamber music. She accompanied singers. She played the accompaniments for the Verdi Requiem. She doesn't remember now if she played in performance or she only played rehearsals, but she stayed very busy as a pianist. And one of the reasons was she was only allowed to practice 1 hour a day. Everyone was given an hour a day to practice. And that's nothing. I mean, you can't even keep up with that. And Alice felt the more she played in concerts, that would be extra practice so she wouldn't lose her technique while she's in the camp.
They eventually allowed her to rehearse a little bit more, right? But not much more.
Not much more.
She still plays more today than she did.
She plays more today than she was allowed to play in the camp. And, of course, they had terrible instruments to play on. One woman who's living in Israel now, who was a pianist, was interviewed not too long ago by an American conductor. And he asked her, what was the quality of the music in the camp? Made her furious. She said, if you mean tempo, technique, whether we played wrong notes, the sound, we had terrible instruments to play on. And what difference does it make? She said, you ask the wrong question. You don't understand. We were music.
So music has sustained her.
Well, she says in the camp, music was our food. And she says, music is my food today. I've lived my life in music. I will die in music.
What is your favorite Alice aphorism?
Oh, that's difficult to say. There's so many favorites. I think when she says, don't stand there and cry, understand.
What was it like for Alice to be liberated from Terezin?
It was very difficult. I think it was difficult for all of the people. They were happy, of course. But as Rabbi Beck said, he saw very little bitterness. He saw sadness. And of course, when they get back to Prague, when Alice returns to Prague, someone else is living in her apartment. It's been confiscated by the Nazis, and somebody's living there who doesn't get out. Her things are gone. Her bank account doesn't exist. She has no passport. She's not even a Czech citizen anymore because the Nazis stripped the Jews of their Czech citizenship, and the Czech government, after the war, would do nothing to help. Nothing. Only the Jewish community that came in and the Red Cross helped at all so they could survive and get a tiny place to live. And eventually, Alice was taken to a warehouse of stolen Nazi goods, a warehouse of many floors that contained only pianos. And she tried to find her own piano, but couldn't. And they let her take home, or sent to her, a Steinway that belonged to someone else. And of course, the first time she saw it, she touched it and wept because, you know, the owner was no longer there, whose beautiful instrument was this. But life was extremely difficult in Prague. The communists were rioting, coming to power. They had groups called Revolutionary Guards that were shooting people, anyone with a German name. In other words, the Czechs were doing to the Germans what the Germans had done to the Jews, except they didn't differentiate. The Germans, using going by name or a German book or hearing someone speak German language, these were people who were Czechs, had been Czechs for 200 years. They were Czech citizens. And they moved 3 million out of the country to the border with no money, no home. They took everything. They stole everything. And Alice saw the handwriting. I mean, actually, even people returning from the concentration camp were killed by the Revolutionary Guards. And at the very last minute, Israel was declared a state in 1948. She got her papers together and immigrated with her child to Israel in 1949. At the very, very last minute, she had met a new man in her life, and she didn't even get to say goodbye to him because he was in prison for writing an article about the communists. But she knew that he would forgive her because there was nothing else to do. And if she hadn't had the courage to leave then, she would have had another 40 years in prison behind the Iron Curtain, whereas she had a glorious life in Israel.
Did she perform again?
Yes, but not the way she did before. Because by this time, 2 years in the concentration camp, then another year in Prague, trying to keep her child fed, and then in Israel, working hard as a teacher. She had little time to practice, and she had to take care of her child alone. So she began to play again, and she played some public concerts, but very little. And she never revived her concert career. It was more like house concerts and playing for friends, because she loved it so much.
What strikes you most about her spirit?
She's a deeply spiritual person in the broadest and most beautiful sense of the word. Alice has only love in her heart. I think I can say that truthfully. It sounds a little saccharine, but she says she hates no one, that she never hated anyone. And I think it's really true. She even has said, I have heard her say it, she said it to me many times, that she went to the Eichmann trial in Jerusalem. She was invited to attend as a survivor. And she went two or three times. She was uncomfortable with the tremendous hatred that she felt in the crowd. How can life go forward if you hate so much? And she said that she actually found herself pitying Eichmann and the entire German nation for the terrible destruction they created, for the wasted lives. And then she thought of all those people and all the children who would never be born because they had been killed, the potential parents had been killed. And she went back home to the safety of music and practiced Bach. But she really lives, Alice lives in a state of forgiveness. She really does. If someone does something wrong, well, she forgives them, which means she doesn't dwell on it. She goes on with her life. And her great secret I think, to this long life is the fact that she can leave bitterness and hatred out of her life and move on and not dwell on it. And I think if I may go back to your question about her spirit, I really believe it's true. And it was true for her. It's true for her friends. It's true for many of the musicians who were into Raisinstadt. People who live their lives in pursuit of beauty don't carry hatred and ugliness and bitterness in their hearts. And that also helps you to survive whatever.
She's turning 109.
109!
How is she going to celebrate?
Well, there is no party for her, so to speak. It's a party all week in a way. Alice lives in a tiny little room. I mean, you could put three of her apartments in this room that we're in right now. It's maybe 11 by 13. It's a studio apartment. It has a tiny little hole for a kitchen and a little bathroom, and that's it. And a stream of visitors will come from morning till night, and they actually have to stand outside the door in the hall because the apartment with five people or six people in that room, it's crowded, and she gets a little claustrophobic. So people will come to see her, people who know her, people who don't know her, people who are her friends, people who wish they were her friends, musicians, people from all the world honoring Alice. And people will bring her, she'll get lots of flowers and chocolates. She loves chocolates.
How is her health?
She's actually very healthy. She's just old. I believe she still takes some high blood pressure medication, but her blood pressure is not terribly high. It's just what it would be elevated because of her age. And she's basically extremely strong and healthy. She had a serious fall a couple of years ago. She didn't break anything. She was bruised, but she didn't break anything. And I think, again, the very healthy lifestyle. By the time she was five, she could swim across the Moldau River. And she swam in Jerusalem. And she swam in England until she was past 100 every day for an hour she swam. And of course, in Prague is a walking city. When she was a child, there was no other way to travel unless you waited for the horse and buggy. So she walked and walked, probably walked a mile to school, 2 miles to school and back. In Jerusalem, she didn't have a car. She didn't have transportation. She walked. And when she moved to London, she continued walking. She probably walked 2 miles a day. At 104, I saw her one day go up and down the entry steps to her building, her apartment building, and I counted, because I began to think about this, 13 stone steps up and down and out and walking 4 times up and down. So a woman of 104 who can do that without a cane, without a helper, she's healthy. She's very strong and very healthy.
Caroline Stossinger, thank you so much for your time today in the CPR Performance Studio here at Colorado Public Radio.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.